Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Good evening and welcome to the History of Alchemy podcast. I'm Travis Dow.
And I'm Pete Coleman from the Bohemican podcast.
Today we're going to talk about Arnold Villanova. And he's also known as Arnaldos de Villa Space Nova, or Arnaud de Villanova, or Arnaldos Villanovanos, or Arnaud de Villeneuve. How was that? Was that a good pronunciation?
That's pretty good. I like that. You're great.
And,
keep it up.
And there's more, but all
well,
variations.
I think we get the idea.
Yeah, but there's all variations thereof. So he lived from 1235 to 1311, or thereabouts. They're not really sure when he died. And he was an alchemist, astrologer, and physician. So kind of run-of-the-mill alchemist, I would say, more or less. He's originally from Valencia. So, apparently he was Catalan. They're not quite sure about that. And he studied chemistry, medicine, physics, and also Arabic philosophy. He lived in the court of Aragon and taught many years in Montpellier, the school of medicine. In Paris, he gained considerable reputation. But while doing this, he must have kind of been saying some weird things, because he incurred the wrath of the ecclesiastics. And according to one source, basically a friend of his in Spain was caught by the Inquisition. And so he fled because he thought he might be next in line, basically. And he went all the way to either Naples or, let's say, the Kingdom of Naples, and probably found asylum in Sicily.
Well, his fame kind of caught up to him a little bit. And a lot of people were talking that maybe all his skill and his wide knowledge of alchemy all were derived from communication with the devil. So the physician deserved nothing less than a burning at the stake, is what many people said. And by attracting this kind of wrath from the clergy and his openly sneering of the monastic regime, and some of his statements were not helpful.
Yeah.
You know, he would say things like he would boldly talk about the works of charity are just so much more acceptable to God than the repetition of paternosters, you know, or just having the repetitiveness of saying, you know, your prayers in church and those type of things.
Yeah.
You know, recitation, basically. That doesn't really make God happy. Works of charity make
sure.
God happy, right? So that really didn't probably enamor him to the church at the time when, you know, that's kind of the path to God, is to go through these repetitions to be closer to God and keep him in your mind. That's not how he looked at it. But thanks to papal favor, Villanova remained unscathed by his enemies. So he kind of got underneath the wire a little bit and did what he wanted to do without a lot of problems. However, it did catch up with him, and soon after his death in the year 1313, the Inquisition decided that they had dealt too leniently with him when he was alive.
Yeah.
So to make matters, really kind of put matters to the test, they burned all his writings publicly in Tarragona. So it's one thing to excommunicate somebody or to not bury them in consecrated ground, but to take away anything that reminded anybody of what you did in life. It's just that one final step that the church felt that they had to do, especially the Inquisition. Because
yeah.
This sent a message to others, didn't it?
I would say because the way he died, I'll get into that in a second, but yeah, probably if he didn't die the way he did, he probably would have been burnt at the stake sooner or later.
It was coming.
It would have caught up to him.
It was coming.
So around 1311 or 1313, you know, the dates vary depending on the source, but he was summoned to Avignon by Pope Clement V, who was ill. So Villanova died on the voyage somewhere off the coast of Genoa. So like I've said, if he didn't die in that accident, he probably would have gotten burned sooner or later, even with the Pope's blessing.
I just don't think the Pope would have called him to this court and said, hey, knock it off and go about your life. I think maybe this was, hey, we're going to keep you here for some questioning, and what happens, happens, all right,
well,
man?
Maybe he just went on the lam. Maybe he just disappeared.
You know, this is such a long time ago. We're talking, you know, around
maybe he
the
discovered,
early 1300s.
Maybe he discovered the elixir of life, and he's living somewhere in Kentucky right now.
You never know. Somewhere in Las Vegas, like Howard Hughes.
That's what I'm going
right,
with.
You know?
Now, remember, Clement V is the same pope that killed all the Knights Templars? with Philip IV. Remember that?
Friday the 13th.
Yep.
Right? Yeah, I remember that. I wasn't there for that, but I remember the story. Yes.
You were probably there. You probably had something to do with it. We brought up the – he studied Arabic philosophy earlier, and he's actually credited with translating a number of medical texts from Arabic, including works by Ibn Sina, which is – you know, we know him as Avicenna. We've mentioned him a few times. And Costa ibn Luca, or in the West known as Costa ben Luca, and Galen, who we've mentioned here and there. He had – now, again, with many of these authors, so there's many alchemical writings that are attributed to him, but there is actually a pretty big doubt whether he actually wrote them. Just to give you some examples, there's the Thesaurus Thesaurorum, the Rosarius Philosophorum, Novum Lumen, the Flos Florum, and they all have kind of a – seems like they have a nice alliteration in some way.
You know, they're all somehow connected to him, you know, in some form or some fashion. But this is not the first time this has happened before. We
right.
had some
yeah.
alchemy who's who.
People attach themselves
really
to a name.
We really don't know if it was one guy, six yeah. guys, if it was, you know, a separation of 10 different years, or we're talking over a century and a half.
But this was a part of his reputation.
Right.
So, yeah, we're bringing it up. But he did do some really cool science. At least it's attributed to him that he may have been the one to discover carbon monoxide. And even possibly pure alcohol, which sometimes is called aqua vitae, like life water, which is, you know, just moonshine, basically.
Well, that would be life water for a lot of people.
That would be, yeah.
It's pretty harsh, but it'll keep you going.
Yeah. Now, he did also have a reputation as a kind of medical writer, and he was – one thing that he may have written was the Breviarium Practicae. So to quote – one of his works, he wrote, "To produce sleep so profound that the patient may be cut and will feel nothing, as though he were dead, take of opium, mandragora bark, and henbane root equal parts, pound them together and mix with water. When you want to sew or cut a man, dip a rag in this and put it to his forehead and nostrils. He will soon sleep so deeply that you may do what you will. To wake him up, dip the rag in strong vinegar." Now, this is revolutionary because he's describing an aesthetic that will put you under. And this is way ahead of its time. People did not understand this at all.
I think if you were suffering from something that needed some medical attention, you called a barber. At the time, a barber
– or a butcher.
Someone called them butchers as well. Yeah. But they were kind of learning as they went. And so most likely that meant that you probably wouldn't survive the treatment. And so if you're really hurting, most likely you probably would have had some kind of mixture of something that would have dulled the pain, or maybe just some sort of alcohol that would have really, you know, have you survive some of the shock. But, you know, Arnold Villanova, he was at heart an alchemist. We talked about some people looked at him as a magician. You know, he really became rich by the means of transmutation of base metals into gold. I mean, that's the idea that supposedly made him his fame. Arnold was also a physician, and I think this is where it comes into is maybe a pioneer of toxicology. We're talking maybe a proto-chemist. He really put forward the contemporary medical remedies of alcohol, putting them into actions of medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It can. It, you know, those snake oil sort of charms that we talk about in America in the late 1800s or mid-1800s, people would buy in droves by these really charlatans, and all it was alcohol,
mm-hmm.
you know. But yeah, it made your rheumatism go away. It made your pneumonia less hard.
At least you forget about it for a while.
Yeah. You could breathe a little bit easier. You know, those type of things. So, alcohol does make a big point in this. You know, Arnold also described what it would be known as the anesthetic that Travis you just talked about.
Yeah.
Right. So something to put somebody under. Variations of the Spongia somnifera were quite common in the 9th to the 14th century.
Mm-hmm.
So this stuff it was used. Sporophic sponges offered a measure of pain relief.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, to make things a little bit clearer for our listeners, it wasn't a general anesthetic that would really put the patient out. Where they would wake up later, you know, and then feel the pain of recovery. But this was more of a local anesthetic, to give you an idea. So a person most likely could be very cognitive of what was going on, even see the action what's going on, but maybe not feel the pain as acutely as they would without this sponge.
Yeah.
right? So that kind of gives you an idea. A front runner to a lot of other things. So
I mean, he was way ahead of his time.
If we're talking about the same guy that we're attributing this name to, you know, then yes, you know, that is absolutely amazing.
I'll leave you with one more kooky story about him. Yeah. So supposedly, before he went to bed every night, he would kind of cover his chest in wax, and he thought this would make you live longer. So this was kind of his elixir of life kind of remedy. And some of his remedies that...
Was it a Vicks 44 vapor rub type of thing?
It was that kind of deal.
Yeah, that kind of opens up your sinuses.
Uh-huh. Make you live 130. Yeah.
There you go.
You didn't even know that, did you? So some of the remedies would consist of a certain quantity of kind of this oriental saffron, red rose leaves, sandalwood, aloes, amber, liquefied in oil of roses, and then this basically like white wax, you know, kind of embedded in there. So in the morning, he would take it off, like this, you know, layer of wax that was solid now, and then he would save it for the next night, and then he would melt it back down and cover his chest with it again. And he did this every night. There's another story is that he raised his own chickens every 7 years, which again, he thought would make him live longer. And he fed this chickens like a very specific diet, and then he would eat one every day. So he was like very cognizant of like, you know, what he fed them, like what his food would eat, basically.
And we talk about that
every 7 years, he would start over.
Yeah, don't we talk about that every day? We you know, not every day, but I mean, it's something
it comes
in
up,
modern talk about how we feed free-range chickens.
Are these free-range? Yeah, exactly.
You know, and how we treat animals that we're going to put on the dinner table later. It is important because not only just the taste, but the, you know, the protein type material that we're putting in our systems, we're also very cognitive of that.
Yeah.
So he was onto something.
He may have been onto something. Yeah, sure. All right. Well, I hope you liked that one. That was kind of short, but that's all. There's a lot of myth out there about this guy. So we'll leave it at that tonight. If we find out a lot more cool stuff, we might do an update.
You can put
later,
it on your website.
Yeah, because I, you know, in my alchemy books, I see this guy mentioned a lot, but it's like a sentence here or there. Or, you know, maybe if you study toxicology, you might get a quote from him, but that's basically about it. So interesting character, but take everything you read about him with a grain of salt.
Well, I think that's what's great about the show, Travis, is that, you know, when we talk about alchemy, especially this podcast, you know, we're putting together this whole big mosaic of a picture here. And there's some people that have greater roles in this mosaic and, you know, that are very vivid, and other folks that kind of fill in the blanks. And this is one of those guys. You know, he fills in the blanks a little bit, but he makes that picture a little bit more complete.
I think the inventor of moonshine definitely deserves a spot on our
podcast. In West Virginia would appreciate this guy.
Absolutely.
Because they are their sons and daughters.
Well, there you have it. All right. Well, thanks for listening.
Thanks very much.
You've been listening to the History of Alchemy podcast with Travis Dow and Pete Coleman. For more information about this episode, other episodes, and other information about alchemy, alchemists, and related subjects, visit historyofalchemy.com. Find us on iTunes, subscribe, review, and don't forget to rate us. We'd love to hear from you. Send your comments, ideas, and corrections to podcast@historyofalchemy.com or get in touch via Facebook on the History of Alchemy podcast page or Twitter @AlchemyPodcast. Tune in to our sister podcast all about the Czech Republic, Bohemicon, which is also available on iTunes or on Bohemicon.com. Until next time on the History of Alchemy podcast, thank you for listening.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.